Welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. It's your guest host, Deb Hutton, with you until 6 o'clock. It's that time of day where I'm joined by some of the smartest people around to talk about some of the issues you and I have been talking about this afternoon and will continue to talk about in the next hour or so. Today, it's Kim Wright, principal and founder of Wright Strategies, Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, and now president and CEO of Variety Village, and Gauratan Singh, who is vice president at Crestview Strategy, a community advocate and a lawyer. Welcome to you all. Let me start with a topic. I'll take just a couple of minutes here to give our listeners a bit of a background on it. A number of years ago, 2020, a call was made about a man in distress, potential concern that this individual who suffered from schizophrenia, a gentleman in his 60s, might do harm to himself. So a call went out. A number of Peel police officers, among others, responded to that call. There were five Peel police officers in total. As a result of what occurred that day, the individual died. The Special Investigations Unit, the SIU, cleared all five Peel police officers of any wrongdoing in that death. The issue, the hearing that's taking place now, 4 years later, is whether or not these Peel police officers should be named. Argument on one side of it says, despite the fact that there was no charge, no connection, no conviction, obviously with no charge, that these individuals are in our community and that individuals should be aware of their history in dealing with a mentally ill individual. The other side of it, those who support the police officers in a publication ban say that there is a threat to these officers that is unfounded, unfair, and their families. So with that as a big introduction, Gauratan Singh, I'm going to start with you. Should there be a continued publication ban in this situation when we are dealing with police officers in our community?
So this is actually a really interesting issue you bring up and a very important one. I was actually in the Legislative Assembly in Ontario during this issue, and I actually questioned the government numerous times on this matter. And I have a bit of an understanding. If I'm not incorrect, it's important to give some context. In this situation, Mr. Ajaz Chowdhury was alone in his apartment when the police entered. And, this is what resulted in him ultimately being shot and killed in his interaction with the police. I am, as a lawyer and as someone who, thinks a lot about the justice system, a principle that exists in our justice system and what really keeps us a nation where rule of law applies to a very high standard is the principle of the openness of our courts. Right? We don't have secret trials. We don't have secret courts. We have an open justice system because that openness, that transparency is important to ensure that there's not a abuse of power, especially when anyone has the ability to impact another individual's liberties or freedoms or any of those basic fundamental charter rights. So when I look at this scenario and I look at these scenarios in general, I think it's important that this principle is upheld. And I think especially when it relates to members of our police services, that we should ensure that they're being held to the highest standards. And if we expect that name to be present in other cases, with the exception of like minors and children, which we often protect for a very clear reason, I think in these circumstances we should uphold that, and names should be published.
All right, Karen Stintz, again, I'll just recap somewhat in response to Gauratan's comments. These individuals, these five officers, were cleared of any wrongdoing by the SIU.
Yeah. And I have a very different view of it, of course, than Gauratan, because what is currently in front of the courts right now is a civil suit, a $22 million civil suit for wrongful death. They're not being charged of any criminal offense. And so if at the end of the civil suit, it's deemed by the courts that there is responsibility and that they're not successful, that the civil suit goes against them, well, then potentially there is reason to stay who they are. But right now, they are innocent. They have not been proven guilty of any crime. So why their names would be publicized is something I don't understand, particularly since they're still on the force and it could compromise their ability to do their job. And I don't see how it serves the interest. I mean, again, to say that justice needs to be transparent to be perceived to be delivered, is a bit bizarre in this case, because what we're talking about is a civil suit. And so I think it's highly appropriate that the police should that, and until there's an outcome and a verdict on that civil suit, I don't think there's any reason to name the police.
Kim Wright.
Just to respond very quickly, the principle of transparency applies to all of our legal institutions, irrespective of it, civil, criminal, otherwise. That's just a principle that exists in law that I'm confident that should be upheld.
Kim Wright.
So I take this as an approach of when anyone is brought before courts, with the exception of minors, but when anyone is brought before the courts, they are named, whether it's civil, criminal, or otherwise. And yes, there is an expectation that you will be, you're innocent until proven guilty, but that doesn't mean that the courts should not, and media should not publish these things. And when there isn't the transparency, especially to the police force, there becomes a question mark of what are we protecting and for what purpose? And maybe this is a one-off situation. Perhaps it's not. Perhaps there is a history. And that's the kind of thing. I can't just say we're only going to put daylight on one thing, one person. We see this in business trials all the time that are civil matters, that they're not criminal matters, they're civil matters. And those individuals are named. It's really quite important to ensure that there is transparency and that there is daylight. And one of the things that we've seen, Deb, over the last, call it 5-6 years, has been a really significant shift from just assuming that police can do what they want to do and how they want to do it, to recalibrating how 911 calls are triaged. Certainly in the city of Toronto, there has been an entire new shift of how we triage police response in a 911. Do you need medical support? Do you need mental health support? How are we triaging this? And that shift has made a significant difference in Torontonians, in call responses, in how police even feel about what they're doing about their jobs. So it's important that we keep daylight, we keep going. And just because somebody is a cop doesn't make them impervious to justice. I'm not saying that there isn't a higher threat of targeting, quote unquote, that Karen's trying to allude to because they're a police officer, but there is an expectation that those who are designed to serve and protect cannot be and should not be above the law. And that also includes how we talk about it in media and in the public.
So after that heavy and very thoughtful, I thank you all, topic, we have very limited time before the break. Kim Wright, you brought this to our attention. The home opener for the Jays was last night. They won. Yay, fans should be happy. But they're unhappy because home plate lady got moved. Tell us about it quickly.
So home plate lady, from the moment the Jays moved into the Sky Dome, you will have seen her on every screen. She has been right behind home plate, doesn't flinch when a foul ball hits. She stares down her opponents. She is just amazing, and follow her on social media because she's hilarious. In the new recalibration, for some reason, this icon of Jay's life, in good times and in bad, this icon got shuffled off to the third or fourth row, off to the side. And it's such a bad look that, again, the icons and that are always at the Jays games should be taken into consideration. It wasn't like she was trying to get cheaper tickets. She's still in a very expensive area. The Jays just didn't really understand how much of an icon they have with her. And they've moved her off to the side. And my biggest pet peeve of all of this is I always want to see the people who are massive fans to be in those really expensive seats. Yeah, but if this is going to turn out to be like Leaf games where everybody shows up halfway through a third of the game and leaves before the third period, I don't want to see that at the Sky Dome. The Jays deserve better than that. And so do fans watching.
We are out of time, so apologies, Karen and Grattan, for not being able to talk about home plate lady, unless you're dying to do it after the break, in which case I'll give you an opportunity. Grattan Singh, Kim Wright, and Karen Stintz are our smart speakers this afternoon. They'll be back after the break with me to discuss more of the topics of the day. You're listening to Deb Hutton. This is The Rush. Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me. It's Deb Hutton, your guest host this afternoon until 6 o'clock. And right now we're talking with three of our smart speakers, Kim Wright, principal and founder founder of Right Strategies, Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, and now president and CEO of Variety Village, and Gratin Singh, VP at Crestview Strategy, a community advocate and a lawyer. So there's an interesting story out of the United States, and I don't pretend that it will be apples to apples here, but the point for me remains the same, and I took some calls on this earlier today. It's a class action lawsuit that's been launched against Dunkin' Donuts. There's also a previous one against Starbucks. And they allege that for people who are lactose intolerant and have to seek out dairy alternatives, the fact that they charge more for those plant-based alternatives is discrimination. Your take on that? Let's start with Karen Stintz. Is the notion that you have to pay more for a plant-based milk substitute if you're lactose intolerant actually discrimination, Karen?
Well, you know, Deb, I was trying to actually find out what the price of a soy is relative to regular milk, because off the top, because I don't buy soy milk, I don't know. But if soy milk is more expensive, then it only makes sense that those who are making beverages with soy milk would charge more. And so if the soy milk is not more expensive, then there's an issue. And if people have a problem with the price of soy milk, I don't know that you take it up at the end of the line. You should take it up at the beginning of the line, which is the soy milk producers. And so, you know, I fully think that, you know, establishments should have variety and choices and options for people. But I think we go a little bit too far when we have the public determining the price of what people can charge for goods that they sell. I think that's a bit of an overstretch.
All right, Gratin Singh, your take on this. For me, the issue is that they're alleging discrimination as a result of this discrepancy in cost.
Yeah, I don't think it's the public they're looking to make the determinations. The courts, as my understanding, because it's a class action lawsuit.
Absolutely.
But that being said, you know, I'd have to agree. This is like a number. This is like an economic question. I don't know what the costs are. I don't know. You know, you have to have that fact and data before you. If it's more expensive to use these non-dairy alternatives, then an increase makes sense. If not, then there could be a problem. And ultimately, then this is something that this information should be transparent and available to the consumer. And then the consumer can make their own decision based on this data to see if they are the victim of some sort of, you know, just kind of getting charged extra for not an economic reason, or if there's a legitimate cost differential that needs to be recouped in prices to the consumer.
But in either scenario, is it discrimination?
No, not at all.
It's a cost thing. Like if it costs more, and if it, I think that's the issue more than anything.
Kim Wright.
This is the most ridiculous American thing I can think of, right? Like this is not discrimination. This is supply and demand. If you're Dunkin' Donuts or anybody else, you're going to buy a lot more of regular milk versus soy milk, almond milk, this, that, or the other milk. So it's just supply and demand. But this is the most American I am being discriminated against at my Dunkin' Donuts that I have ever heard. If you know what the prices are, you know where this stands, you're really just trying to get a really interesting payday out of the U.S. court system. And, you know, God bless America.
I think we're all in agreement, maybe for slightly different reasons, but we're all in agreement. So that's saying something about a topic. Let's see where we go on this one. We may be surprised that we're all in agreement on this one as well. Pierre Poilievre, Opposition Day motion calling on the Prime Minister to meet with all of the provincial and territorial premiers on the issue of a carbon tax. Fairly, I think, rational approach to opposition politics, a sound suggestion, a sound tactic. Where I part company, and the question I want to ask the three of you with Pierre Poilievre on this, is that he thinks that it should be televised, that this should be an open meeting of first ministers. Gratin, I'll go back to you on this one. Your take on it.
So I'll say this, just off the jump. The Liberals have done a really terrible job in communicating and carrying out this whole issue around a price on pollution, something that I support. It's an important factor. But when he did the carve out, he kind of opened up a huge chink in his armor that has been exploited by the opposition. My issue though with the opposition is that they have not put forward a sound climate plan, and I think that's problematic. with all these premiers who are also being very against the carbon tax, I always want to remind folks that they had the opportunity to implement their own price on pollution. They decided not to. They had a federally imposed program put upon them, which they don't like. Well, they probably should have put something that was more appropriate for their province. With regards to a meeting, if the prime minister should be meeting with premiers, that's a normal ask, an important ask. I think the need for a meeting to be politicized is clearly, as we all know, anyone from a political background knows that that's not going to result in an actual productive and positive conversation, because it turns into a media project as opposed to an actual conversation to get things done for Canadians. So they should meet with the premiers. The premier should meet the premiers. The televised nature of an actual meeting itself, I think, is just a political media stunt, and that doesn't seem like a strategic thing or important. A really good way to get solutions for Canadians.
Karen Stintz, any disagreement?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree somewhat with Grattan and probably be the dissenting opinion on the panel. But I think if we're talking about transparency and the position of the Conservatives is that the provinces need to be engaged in this discussion, I think that there is an element of transparency and accountability if it is an open meeting where the provinces have to come forward with what their solutions are, and that it shouldn't be a behind the doors meeting that then the prime minister can script out some pre-made announcement. Like it does change the dynamics. It shifts the accountability to the provinces. It actually opens up the potential for a better solution, and everyone's got to come with their A game. So I think it's actually a very interesting approach.
Kim Wright.
I'm trying not to laugh at all of this, because the reality is that Pierre Poilievre couldn't be bothered to show up in the House of Commons to vote on his own non-confidence vote on the carbon tax. This is nothing but theatrics. And by the way, that's televised. He could have shown up, but he decided he needed to be elsewhere and couldn't even be bothered to stomach to vote for his own motion. So we're going to park that for a second. But guys, this is not like watching WrestleMania. We are not going to break attendance records and viewership numbers by watching a federal, provincial, territorial first minister's meeting. Look, if you want to start talking about what do provinces want to finally come to the table with on their own carbon tax, we're starting to see that. Scott Moe is even coming at it with his own versions of these things. The reality is this is not an interesting discussion to be had televised. I'm not even sure CPAC would cover it. But if they were, to what end? This is Pierre Poilievre trying to get more headlines, which we've now given him. He doesn't actually want to do the work. He does not want to find solutions. At the end of the day, he just wants to sell more merch, which is going to be, what Karen Stintz, as she's out on the hustings that she was on the weekend, will be wearing every day for the campaigns. This is not about anything more than selling merch, raising money, and giving something more to knock on doors about. That's all this is.
Quite a privilege, Kim. I actually designed my own T-shirt on Saturday.
All right. Good news. You're going to get to, as with Pierre Poilievre's wife, get to design some merch. But the reality is this is about selling merch and getting data and getting some headlines. This is not about good governance. This is not figuring out whether climate change is real or should we do anything about it, which, by the way, the Conservative Party does not believe in either of those things.
On that highly partisan ending, I'm going to say thank you, Kim Wright, Karen Stintz, Grattan Singh, our smart speakers for this Tuesday.